Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're talking with a couple of guests who have been nurturing and promoting the independent arts and DIY scenes here in Portland. Later in the show, I'll be joined by H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival co-director Gwen Callahan. But first, let's talk with an author, photographer, and videographer who has documented everything from house concerts to cat conventions to the George Floyd uprisings. His new book is called Choice Cuts, and he'll be appearing at the Portland Art Museum's Tomorrow Theater on September 25th. Corbin C., welcome to Words and Pictures.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Corbin, let's talk about your book, Choice Cuts. This is published by a small press here in town, Buckman Journal.
Yeah. Buckman. I have been working with them for a number of years. The journal has been out going for, oh, I don't know, probably 6-7 years now. And I was actually in their first issue. I had met their artistic director at the time, and she was looking for content. And they ended up publishing some of my photos and doing a short interview with me then. And they've published some more of my work over the years since. And then they started to move into bookmaking. And I got an email one day from Rich with Buckman and said, let's make a book. And it all kind of developed from there. We was a back and forth for about a year and a half where we were, trading pictures and captions and dialogue to kind of pull all the content together to create what you've got in your hands right there.
Yes, there is an introduction to the book by Buckman Journal co-founder Rich Perrin. And he says, Corbin's instrument is a disposable film camera, the mass-produced kind, single-use, made of cardboard, popular before the convenience of digital. They have a mechanical thumb wheel to ratchet the next frame of film, pure analog. So yeah, like it says, you're a fan of analog technology. You appreciate the organic look of photochemical film and Hi-8 video.
Yeah, definitely. I've been taking pictures my whole life since I was a, preteen. And I've been shooting on film pretty much exclusively for many years now and nothing but a disposable camera since about 2014. That kind of became my medium of choice. And, I've always found that it allows me to be more present in what I'm doing. I don't have to be messing with manual settings on a camera. I'm not looking over the pictures I've already taken because you don't have an option with analog. And so I'm able to be just in the moment, being present, take the picture and move on, slips in my pocket. I've basically always got a camera on me. I leave the house with a phone, camera, keys, wallet. So it's always there with me, whatever I might happen to see along the way. And I've taken 21,000 plus photos in the past decade, all on disposable camera.
I'm continuing to read here from this introduction by Rich Perrin. A phone fails to capture the vibe, the sweat, the closeness of atmosphere, all the noise that rubs all the senses. The cardboard camera and its cheap all-purpose film records these moments with an intimacy better than the technological treasures of smart devices. I was surprised all of these photos in the book Choice Cuts were taken between 2015 and 2023. I was surprised it's still easy to find these disposable cameras in stores.
Yeah, that's so it's actually kind of has really impacted why I use disposable cameras like this, because back in the old days when they were more common, you could go into Walgreens and buy a camera for $5-6, and so you use them here or there. In 2014, I had recently moved back to Portland. I was heading to a party. I stopped at a Walgreens on the way, figured I'd grab a disposable camera for the party, and they were like $15 a piece. I mean, this was back in 2014, a long time ago. They were so expensive. And so I bought these two cameras sort of thinking like, this will probably be the last time I ever use one of these, because at this price, it's just not sustainable to take pictures with these cameras. Took two rolls of film, went home. I got on eBay and I typed in disposable camera just to see if something might pop up. And I ended up buying 32 cameras for $48. So $1.50 a piece, like nothing. And at the time, 32 cameras seemed like an absurd number of disposable cameras to have. Like I thought there's no way I would ever use all these up. So I started just like slipping one in my pocket when I'd leave the house for the day. And, pretty quickly I found myself going through about a camera a week. So I just kept looking on eBay, and I was able to, for years, continue finding cameras for at most $4 to $5 a piece in bulk quantities on eBay. And that's really how I sustained this for a long time.
Well, a lot of these pictures are just super close-ups of the small music shows, of the performers, and of the audience. And I can remember house concerts and basement shows from the 1990s before Portland got discovered by all the beautiful people from Silver Lake and Williamsburg and Silicon Valley. Now in the 2020s, is the music scene still as raw and do-it-yourself despite all the gentrification?
I think it definitely is. I mean, obviously the city has changed, a lot over the years, as have, all places. But I think one thing about Portland is that while it is this destination for artists to come and create their art and community, we don't really have an arts industry here. I think about this person who I met some years ago who, he came out here because he was like, "Oh, I hear these people making music in Portland. I want to be making music." But his mindset was, "I want to have a career in music." He's a DJ. He came out here, he very quickly realized nobody here is really actually making a sustainable career. There's not record labels. There's not the industry like in, definitely in Silver Lake and New York City and these places where people can really make it big, playing indie music. And so, he sort of realized like, oh, if you want to make music here, you're probably doing it online. He now does like, he does stuff on the internet, and he does, soundtracking and that kind of thing. Not really involved in the local music community, while a lot of the people in the local music community, they're not making a lot of money off of it, which kind of, I would love for my friends who are artists and musicians to be thriving doing that thing. But at the same time, the fact that there is so little money in it means that they can kind of do whatever they want. There's a lot of creative freedom that people can exercise here. And I think that Portland is a place that is very, not just forgiving, but welcoming to your strange experimental projects and those offshoots that maybe wouldn't be as popular for a broad audience in a bigger city are really well embraced here. And so I think people really they gravitate to Portland because of the community of arts and community of musicians that happen here. And so it is still very DIY, because it's up to those people to make it all happen.
Now, Portland gained a reputation back in 2020 for the intensity of our George Floyd protests, or at least the perceived intensity. What do you think your photographs show about those months?
I mean, I think a lot of that's, it's not necessarily anything new. I think it was George Bush Sr. that called Portland Little Beirut some, 30 plus years ago. This is, I think in our genes in a lot of way that, people in Portland are happy, are proud to stand up to, oppressive figures. And I think that with the George Floyd protests in particular really blew up because it was in the midst of the pandemic, and a lot of people weren't working. A lot of people in the service industry that is so much of the local economy here had lost their jobs. A lot of those people are already politically involved. Something really heinous happened, and people were happy to take to the streets to make a point of going against that. And I mean, I was there too. I don't think of myself as a photographer, to be honest. I take pictures, but I'm just a person who's there. I'm an audience member. When I'm at shows, when I'm at wrestling, I'm there protesting when I'm at a protest. So I'm taking pictures because that's what I like to do when I'm in an environment, but I'm not there to take pictures. I'm there to be part of the protest as well. And whether it's with friends and comrades or just whoever else is there present. And then I like to document what's going on, proof that it happened, try to kind of give a sense for like that visceral, feeling of what's there. And at the same time, there's a lot that's missing from my photos. Between either the limitations of a disposable camera, in some of the more dramatic, explosive, let's say, scenes that I was, there for during 2020, breathing in tear gas. Disposable camera is not going to capture that. And also, I'm busy running from the cops. I don't have time to deal with that. And so, there are those things that are pictured. There are those things that are not. I generally try to avoid taking pictures that are identifiable of people. I don't want to be one of those photographers that is doxing people because I'm trying to like, promote myself. Like, that's not what it's about. And I think that's also part of what I like with shooting on film is that immediacy is not there. And so by the time the pictures are visible, things have already kind of like, moved along, and I can be a little bit more thoughtful about which pictures I am putting out there and which ones I'm not.
All right. On September 25th at the Tomorrow Theater, you'll be screening some of the music videos that you shot on Hi8. What can the audience expect to see?
So kind of a mishmash of things. I started, well, I first shot on Hi8 when I was a child using my family's camcorder. And then I dug out that same camcorder some, 30 years later and started playing with it again around 2020, shooting lots of different things. Just sort of the same way that I've approached using my disposable cameras, just carrying it around with me a lot of the time, shooting bands, shooting things that I'm seeing. And so when it comes to music videos that I've been involved in, some of them are videos where I was invited to shoot, to work together, to, specific shots to create a video. Other times, bands have asked to just use the footage I've already made, B-roll stuff, to put it together to make a video. Those have all been really fun to be involved in. I'm not a video editor, not how my mind works, well outside of my expertise. So every one of these have been a situation where I provide the video to somebody else, who then creates the final content. And that's been a really fun way to collaborate with people who do have those editing skills and editing desires, because it's a lot of work and it takes a long time. So, I'm able to kind of give them the raw material, and then something comes out of it that has their own touch on it also. So it's, I love when I have that opportunity to collaborate with people like that. I mean, same kind of thing with the book. It was very much, Rich and then Chris, who works with him at Buckman, who kind of took my content and made it into the work that is Choice Cuts.
All right, well, what's next for you? Any new directions in your chronicling of life in Portland?
Well, I had a baby about 12 weeks ago, so
Wow,
that's been a big
congratulations.
change in the things I'm taking pictures of, because now I've got a little baby that I'm carrying around with me. We're still going to shows. He's been to about half dozen DIY shows already, so I've got pictures now of the baby with the big headphones at the rock show. But I'm kind of doing the same thing I'm doing. I love any kind of performance. Especially if I can take pictures at it. So it's maybe a little, I'm not as welcome at the ballet, perhaps. They don't want the flash going off. But I just love seeing people perform and seeing what people are going to do next. Sometimes I go to a show and it's like, yeah, this is fine, it was good, whatever. But it's still not uncommon that I go to a show and my mind is blown and I see something that I'd never seen before. I mean, we took the baby to a show about a month ago where some people were, they were playing a ladder. They were bowing a ladder. They had mics hooked up to it. They had things. I'd never seen anything like that. It blew my mind. I was like, this is incredible. This is why I go out to shows, because every once in a while, somebody's playing the ladder. And I never know when I'm going to be surprised and shocked by that next thing. And so I feel like I'm always looking for whatever's going to be entertaining next. I like to keep an open mind to what that's going to be. I'm try to be both genre agnostic and medium agnostic. And so wherever I can find myself and people are on a stage, I love being there.
All right, you're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, SW Conser, and we've been talking with author, photographer, and videographer Corbin C. His new book is called Choice Cuts, and he'll be appearing at the Portland Art Museum's Tomorrow Theater on September 25th. Corbin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me. It was great chatting with you, and I appreciate you featuring the book and the release party.
Well, now, how can listeners find out more about your work?
So I have a website, which is just my name, corb.in is the whole address, with pages for every show I've been to, every artist I've photographed, every event, everything. And so it is a large, actively growing database and archive of all my work. So everything is always there. Stuff ends up on social media sometimes as well, but I've been kind of putting my energies more into developing my photo archive on the website, so that I kind of have my own place where I can feature things, the way I want them to be seen.
Okay, in just a minute, we'll be talking with H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival co-director Gwen Callahan. But first, we want to let you know that KBOO is in the midst of our KBOO Out Loud membership drive. You may have heard that the powers that be have succeeded in killing off the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's a serious blow for democracy and free speech. But it doesn't mean that all is lost for community radio. Yes, the billionaires would love to silence the voices of communities like ours. Taking over the public airwaves is high on the wish list of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. But you have the power to stand against the oligarchs, and supporting KBOO Radio is a great start.
There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now we're joined by the co-director of a local film festival that will be celebrating a big anniversary this month. When it comes to gothic horror, she's been a big part of the cinematic and literary scenes. Gwen Callahan, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, you bet. So Gwen, the 30th annual H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and Cthulhu Con will be kicking off the spooky season this year. What can you tell us about this festival and the inspiration behind it?
Oh my gosh. Well, it was founded back in 1995 by a man named Andrew Migliori, who is a fixture in the Portland film festival scene. He wanted people to start making more faithful adaptations of H.P. Lovecraft stories because there was a lot out there that was attributed to Lovecraft that were just, they just weren't doing it very well. So he was like, you know, maybe if I start a film festival, people will have a place to and a reason to start adapting things more faithfully. And so it kind of grew from just like a one night thing to a two night thing to a three night thing at the Hollywood Theater. And now it has taken over all three screens of the Hollywood Theater for the whole weekend. It's been there since 2000, the year 2000, I believe. So this will be the 25th year at the Hollywood Theater and the 30th year of the festival. So my husband, Brian, and I have been running the festival since 2011. So this is our 15th festival that we're running.
Wow. And there's a lot of films. Not every film in the festival is a straight up adaptation of a Lovecraft story.
That is correct. Yeah. So it is, we've kind of rebranded it as the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and CthulhuCon, Festival of Cosmic Horror, Weird Tales, and the Supernatural, or Uncanny Supernatural. And so we do kind of try to always include, you know, some strong adaptations of Lovecraft stories, but we also include literary adaptations of his contemporaries and writers that he admired, such as Poe and Robert Chambers. We've had some adaptations of Algernon Blackwood did The Willows and just other random gothic and weird kind of weird fiction authors. And then we also, you know, the advent of consumer level good technology for people being able to make films on their own with a small budget has exploded since the early 2000s. And so now we're getting these like professional grade films that were made in people's quote unquote backyards. I mean, they're finding whatever locations they can. They're on a shoestring budget. They're just press ganging all their friends and family into helping them be crew. And they are creating a lot of original stories that are inspired by Lovecraft, whether overtly or covertly, as it were. Sometimes we have filmmakers submit things that were like, yeah, this really gets cosmic horror and the weird tale. And they've never read Lovecraft before. So that's a fun one because it kind of shows us how deeply rooted in horror and like literary horror Lovecraft is. He's been such a huge influence on people, not only directly, but through like a filter of like filmmaker A may be inspired by filmmaker B, who was inspired by Lovecraft, but filmmaker A doesn't know about Lovecraft. They just know about filmmakers B's work. That's a fun thing.
And a little bit of background, H.P. Lovecraft, he was an American author in New England back in the early 20th century. So sort of in that spooky area of the continent where a lot of witchy stories and dark legends came out of.
Yeah, so he was born in 1890 in Providence, Rhode Island, and pretty much lived there his whole life except for a short period of time where he lived in New York. But yeah, I mean, that's the seat of kind of American gothic horror settings. You know, you've got Stephen King up in Maine and, you know, Edith Wharton writing up in there and just all the dreary New England coastline and
Washington Irving, if you go way back.
Yeah. Upstate New York. And that whole area is just so old and has so much history that it's got a lot of fodder for the imagination. And Lovecraft was also into science. So he was up on the latest astronomy findings and latest scientific findings. And kind of merged the two. We really regard him kind of as the grandfather of modern horror because he kind of made that bridge from gothic horror to modern horror and giving it his own spin.
So at the festival, you're going to be inviting the community in and setting up a marketplace. That's a regular thing.
Yeah, so we have the Mall of, we call it the Mall of Cthulhu or the Bazaar of the Bizarre, if you will. And we've got, it's not a huge lobby, but there's enough space for a few vendors. So we've got some small press with their books that are coming out. Underland Press has the Cozy Krampus collection coming out that is filled with some great cosmic horror authors and horror authors, many of them local that you might not recognize. Tenebris Press will be there. The H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society has returned, and they'll have a merch table. They're also going to be doing a live performance of one of their radio plays, and they're doing The Temple this year. It is also the 20th anniversary of their short film, which is a silent film called The Call of Cthulhu, which is generally regarded as one of the most faithful and best adaptations of a Lovecraft short story. So both of those will be accompanied by Dean Lemire of the Columbia River Theater Organ Society. I think that's everything. but he is a maestro and he will be accompanying them on the pipe organ for both things. So I'm very excited about that. This has never happened at our festival before. And I hope people come experience it in person.
Yes. So there's a deep love in the Gothic community for the stories of H.P. Lovecraft. But H.P. Lovecraft, the person, well, he's been dead a long time, but he can still be considered a bit problematic.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, yes, he was a man of his time. And on the other hand, people of his time also knew that the situation with racism and things like that were not great. So how do you reconcile being a modern person and then enjoying Lovecraft, who grew up in a time where it was acceptable to have Jim Crow law and the formation of police forces that were basically created to hunt down runaway slaves, then became our modern police bureaus. It's hard. So I don't know. I think two things can be true at once. He was maybe problematic in his personal beliefs, but he also wrote a lot of really great fiction that a lot of people that are marginalized in society tend to strongly identify with, partially because I think Lovecraft himself felt like an outsider and like he didn't really fit in. And, you know, like now that we're in a modern age, we can kind of take that influence, you know, accept the writer for his flaws. And as you said, he's dead. He's been dead since 1936. And he's not making any money off of his work that people are reprinting. He's not making any money off of the films that are being made around him. And for me, one of the things that I love about our festival is that new people are discovering his work and kind of just taking it and using it for what they need and making it their own. And that's kind of how he wanted things to be. Like he wanted people to take his characters and monsters and settings and his kind of mythos. Like you, yeah, use my characters because the more people that use them made it kind of like made it more real. So some of his friends would borrow monsters and characters from his work, and he would borrow monsters and characters from their work. I guess you could call it like an open source mythology. And so I think it's pretty cool that like it's open for people who have an imagination and are inspired by his work that maybe want to take it in a different direction and they have something to say that speaks to their own life and speaks to a more modern sensibility.
All right. Well, the festival is the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and Cthulhu Con, and it's taking place from September 19th through the 21st here in Portland. Gwen, fill us in on the details one more time.
Oh my gosh. So it will start Friday night. We have our opening feature presentation of the Call of Cthulhu with the live pipe organ accompaniment and a bunch of short films. So that is kind of the highlight of our festival. The audience that has been with us for a long time really, really looks forward to all of the short films. We are one of the main festivals that kind of zeroes in on a short film heavy program. And it's kind of because it's a lot easier to make independent films that are short as opposed to features. And then Saturday, all day Sunday, we have our film guest of honor, David Pryor, joining us. He's actually working on a Guillermo del Toro project right now and is there in pre-production. So we're not quite sure if he's going to be with us Friday, but he will definitely be there Saturday and part of Sunday. And we're going to be doing a special screening of The Empty Man, which he wrote and directed during the pandemic. And so it didn't really get a proper theatrical release. And then it kind of just got buried in all the other releases that came out after that. So we're excited for people to be able to see that on the big screen with David in attendance for a Q&A. And then we've got a new Poe feature called The Oval Portrait. We have more of a sci-fi cosmic horror called Tribe by Dan Asma. Another a black and white film that's very cosmic horror, but it's very artsy called The Harbormen by Casey Malone, who has shown films at our festival before. And then on Sunday, we also have the US premiere of a really interesting 70s throwback film called A Blind Bargain, written and directed by Paul Bunnell. And he and some of the cast and crew are going to be coming up for that. And that'll be playing on Sunday afternoon. And that's got a great style. It's like a Hammer horror or a Night Gallery kind of film. And it's got that weirdness as well. Come and see that in person on the big screen. We also on Sunday, every year we do Lovecraft Under the Gun, which is a 72-hour film competition where teams get together. They have 3 days to write, shoot, edit, score, and finish a cosmic horror or Lovecraftian short film. And we screen all the eligible entries on Sunday afternoon as well. And we have 9 teams this year that finished the assignment. So those will be screened all together. And that's going to be really cool. And then we also have a literary guest of honor because it is a Cthulhu Con as well. And we are so excited to be having Cassandra Kaw with us as our literary guest of honor. And they are a Stoker award-winning novelist. They did Hammers on Bone. They just came out with a book called The Library at Hellebore. They had a book called Hell's Bells that was in the Critical Role series. And they're also a game designer. So they're multi-hyphenate, and they'll be doing a reading at the opening ceremonies and a closing speech, and they'll be on a couple panels and readings as well. Yeah, it's a kind of a packed festival. If people are want to know the all of the details, they can go to hplff.com and click on the Portland tab and navigate around to see all the films and the schedule and where to buy tickets and all that stuff.
Gwen Callahan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and hopefully we'll see you at the festival.
Well, we hope that everybody has been enjoying our special programming for KBOO's Out Loud membership drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support. We mentioned already that the billionaire class has succeeded in their efforts to kill off the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But you still have the power to keep the last of our public airwaves out of the hands of the oligarchs. And supporting KBOO Community Radio is a great start. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214.
Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.